We're on Daf Chaf Amid Beis, eight lines down from the top. We're discussing the issue, the suffix of Rava, regarding Zenene Vizelo Chaser. Tnan, we learned in a Mishnah at the beginning of Baba Basra on Daf Dalet Amid Beis, Hamakif Chavero Misholosh Ruchosov. You'll see that Rashi has a little bit of a diagram here. And that is that Reuven has three fields, and they're all contiguous to Shimon's field. They surround Shimon's field on three sides. So Shimon is the inner field, Reuven is the three fields that surround Shimon. V'gadar es harishonav es hashniav es hashlishis. Reuven puts up fences on the three sides, the three boundaries, to separate his three fields from Shimon's field in the middle. And the issue of the Mishnah is whether or not Shimon can be billed to participate in the expenses of the building of these three fields. And the Mishnah says, Ein mechayven oso. Shimon, who has the inner field, does not have to pay a dime. Mishum shu lo nene, big fencing around the three sides of his field. And the reason why the Mishnah says he doesn't have to pay for that and he doesn't have to contribute is because on the fourth side his field is still exposed. So the Gemara therefore is medayek in the Mishnah ha revius. If Reuven had surrounded Shimon on all four sides and built the fence on all four sides, apparently mechayven oso, in that case, Shimon would have to contribute to the building of the wall. Shma mina, we derive from this, zenene vezelo chaser chayav. Shimon, what's the machayv of Shimon to participate in the hotzos of this wall, of this gader? It's hana, the fact that he gets a benefit. Because now, you know, he's surrounded by fences on all sides, which is great. You know, no animals could come in from the outside and do damage. It's a great security fence. And why is this a case of zelo chaser? In other words, it's crystal clear that it's zenene, that Shimon benefits from this. But why is Reuven considered lo chaser? And the answer is that Reuven needs these fences for himself. He gains something from the fences in the fact that, you know, no animals from Shimon's field will now roam and cause damage in Reuven's field. And the hana of Shimon here does not in any way detract from Reuven. So again, Reuven wants these fields, these fences, in any event. Shimon gets benefit from these fences, but that benefit does not create any loss to Reuven. And it's exactly similar to the case of a squatter in the case of a chatzah that's not omedesli agra, because the owner of the chatzah wouldn't have in any event rented out the chatzah. So the squatter does not squatters in his benefit from it, because again he would have paid good money for rental to pitch his tent. Nevertheless, that hanor per se causes no loss to the owner of the chatzer. Here too, the hanor that Shimon derives from being fenced around does not in any way detract or cause a chisaron, a loss of funds to Reuven. Reuven, in any event, even if Shimon was not benefiting from the fences, would still spend the exact same amount of money on the fences. And yet the Mishnah is implying that in this case Shimon has to chip in. So you see that Zenev Zelo Chaser's Chayav. And this should determine and tip the scale on the original suffix. Shani Hassan Gemara rejects this proof. The Omar Lay, because Reuven has the right to say to Shimon, Ato garamtali hekefa yisera. You caused me that I would have to surround my fields with these inner walls, In other words, if not for your field, Shimon, says Reuven, I just need my outer walls on the outer boundaries of my field to keep animals away. And if your sada was not punked, you know, directly in the middle of my fields, the outer fences would have been fine, would have been sufficient. Now that your field is smack in the middle of my fields, I need to be makif I have to set up the inner walls, the inner fences, to make sure that that I am not damaged by you, by your animals. And therefore, this is a case of zenene v'zechoser. And that's why the mission implies Shimon is chayv to pay Reuven and Shimon for the expenses of setting up the walls. Now Rashi emphasizes that Reuven's fields surround Shimon on all four sides. If that wouldn't be the case, then when Reuven puts up the fences on all four sides, clearly he's losing money over here. That would be ze chaser, and it would have no bearing on our suffix of ze nene ve lo chaser. Meaning, the Gemara wouldn't have had a havamina to quote this as a case of ze nene ve lo chaser if Reuven's fields surround Shimon only on three sides. Now, this is the way Rashi learns the sugya. Whatever we've said fits in to Rashi, and we'll try to elaborate on that. But at the same time, we have to know that Tosfos Dibra Maschil Ata has a different interpretation of this sugya. And we're talking about the outer walls of Reuven. And if not for the fact that Shimon's field was there, you know, in between the fields of Reuven, then the outer fences would have been smaller. In other words, again, this of course is basic geometry, but the larger the hekif, the larger the outer circle, the more fences you'd have to put up to circle it. So now, according to Tosfos, Reuven's argument against Shimon of chaser is that as a result of the existence of your field inside my field, I have to expand the hekif of the fences. Now, according to Rashi, that the issue is the inner fences that are being put up to separate Reuven's field from Shimon's. Then, when the mission implies that Shimon has to chip in, it's clear that Shimon would pay half of the expenses for putting up the mechitzas between them. But according to Tosfos, that we're talking about the outer walls, the outer fences, which really separate Reuven's field from the wild, from the bika, as it's called, then we have to ask the question, how much should Shimon, the Pnimi, be paying in order to chip in for Reuven's expenses on setting up these outer fences? And l'chora, the answer is that it would have to be some sort of calculation in which we would draw two squares. We would draw one square that goes around Reuven's fields, we would draw another square around Shimon's fields, and the hana element of Shimon would be reflected in the smaller square, not in the what we call the shetach hakloli, you know, the broader area. And this is clarified by the Ramah, who's quoted by the Tur in Chol Shemishpat Kufna Nun Ches, and he says, "Roim es haribua hakloli shel sados hachitzon im sada pnimi v'tochan, we calculate the outer square with Shimon's inner field inside of it, and that's a chishuv of shetach hakloli. Then roem ribua shel sada pnimi levada. Then we create a kind of a square which defines the boundaries of the inner field and its shetach, its area, and then we'll try to see and evaluate how much of the shetach hakloli is beyond the shetach hapnimi. Thus, we're going to make that calculation and that subtraction. So, for example, if the inner field of Shimon with its square, its shetach, might be half of the he writes im chatzi chetzi v'im shlish shlish. So again, depending upon how much of an expansion there is, that part of the expansion that's on Reuven's cheshbon, and Shimon would be nene according to the inner square. And all this is discussed at great length in the Nesivus, there in Kuf Nun Ches and Sivkat Vav. And right now what we're going to do is move on in the Gemara here on Daf Chaf Amid Beis. Once the proof from Baba Basra was rejected, then we're going to have to bring a proof from Rav Yosef, who has a whole different comment, a whole different perspective on the Mishnah in Baba Basra. Toshma. We're going to go back to the Mishnah in Baba Basra, but this time we're going to focus on Rav Yosi. Om Rav Yosi, Im Omad Nikaf V'Goder Es Haravius. Even in the case, the ratio of the Mishnah where Reuven built, he erected fences on three sides, if subsequently Shimon gets up and he puts up the fourth fence, meaning on that side that was not fenced off by Reuven because it's not contiguous to Reuven's field, is Megalgalon Olav Es Hakol. Rav Yossi sees a Gili Das here on the part of Shimon, the Pnimi, that he wants this fence. Haraya, he put up the fourth wall, the fourth sign, and therefore Shimon is chayv to pay. So the Gemara now is medayik in the language of Rav Yossi. Taima, the reason why Shimon has to pay is the Godar Nikaf. In other words, Shimon is called the Nikaf, and he himself put up the fourth fence. Ha-makif, implying, again, according to the Shita Rav Yossi, if the outer person, that's Reuven, was the one who put up the fourth side, let's say, for example, if Reuven purchases a field that's contiguous to Shimon's field on that side, then potter, right? It's only because Omad Nikaf V'Godar Atzma. But if Reuven put up the fourth fence, then according to Rav Yossi Aglili, Shimon the Nikaf doesn't have to pay. Shmamino, let's derive the opposite conclusion. Nene, ze nene, vizelo chaser, potu. That even though Reuven is self-motivated now that he bought that last field to surround and close the entire fence, he doesn't lose anything by the fact that Shimon benefits from that fence. Nevertheless, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, since there was no Gili Das on the part of the Nikaf, on the part of Shimon, he never got up and put up the fourth wall, even though he had time to do so, is therefore he, Shimon, doesn't have to pay for Hana, even though he gets a tremendous benefit here. The answer is Zenen of Zelo Chaser Potter. The Gemara says, no, that's not a proof either. Rabbi Yosef Aglili is not going to tip the scale here, because Shiny Hasam, It's different, the Omar Lay, because Shimon says to Reuven, in defense of himself, he doesn't want to have to pay. Udidi Sagili Binatira Bar Zuza. Now, at this point in the sugya, we're getting into more specific issues about the nature of the fence that Reuven erected. The basic cheapo fence would be called Netira Barzuza. You know, like a scarecrow kind of thing to keep the animals in there. I mean, it's literally a gader kotzim. You put up thorns and you surround that area. Those thorns sell in the market for about a zuz, like one buck. And that's going to be enough to set up the boundaries between the two fields. On the other hand, there's something called a gader shalavanim, which is a real kotel, you know, made a wall made of stones. That's a lot more expensive. Now, Reuven took the initiative to surround Shimon's field with a gader shalavanim. Shimon has the right to counter, and he says, "L'didi sagli, as far as I'm concerned, all I need is a netira bar zuza. Just put up a couple of thorn bushes, and I'm fine. And that's basically valueless or costless." And that's why Rav Yossi Aglili says, based on this argument that Shimon has in his own self-defense, that Shimon doesn't have to pay. Toshma. Let's see if we can quote a Mishnah and determine, there's a Mishnah at the end of Bab Metzia, determine the suffix here. Habayis v'aliyah shel shnayim. There's a bayis that's built on karka, and that karka belongs to the person who built the house. But haliyah, the uppermost part of this house, we'll call it the roof of the house, belongs to someone else. That's called bayis v'aliyah shel shnayim. So Reuven owns the bayis, and Shimon owns the aliyah. Shenofl. Now both the bayis and the aliyah collapsed. Omar bal aliyah lebal habayis livnos. The owner of the higher part, the roof, turns to the owner of the house and he says to him, "You know what? You should reconstruct the house in order so that I can build on top of your house, and so I can structure the roof in any way I want." But the owner of the house counters and he says, "Ain't a rota, I'm not interested." Is a rebal aliyah bona bayis? The owner of the upper part builds a house. The yoshev ba achi yiten lo yitziosov. And he's going to continue living there in that house until the owner of the house that fell is going to chip in for the building of the house. At such time, when the Baal HaBayis pays the Baal HaAliyah for the building of the house, then the Baal HaAliyah, once the house is constructed, he'll build the Aliyah on top of the house. Now, Yitziosov, who demachayevli? The Gemara is medayik from the long language of the Mishnah. What does the Baal Bayis have to pay in order to regain his rights to the building? It's only Yitziosov. In other words, the expenses of the Baal Aliyah, who demachayevli Baal Bayis. Hascharo. What about the fact that there's something called schar dira, meaning the Baal HaBayis l'chora should have a right to demand schar dira, rental fees, from the Baal HaAliyah who's been living in the house? Lo, says the Gemara, those digits of money, which are called schar dira, cannot be subtracted from the hotzos, the expenses to build this house on the part of the Baal Aliyah. Says Gemara Shmami no, zenene vezelo chaser potter. Again, the Baal Aliyah was nene by living in this house up until the point when the Baal Abai is willing to chip in for the building of the house. Meaning, if he didn't have this house to live in, he would have paid good, very solid rental fees to get a roof over his head. On the other hand, the Baal Bais is not chaser. I mean, he himself, the Baal Bais, didn't want to build the house. And in such a case, the nene is patur. In other words, the schar of dira is not factored into this whole calculation to subtract from the amount of money that the Baal Bais would have to reimburse the Baal Aliyah for the expenditures of building the bayis, because that's the situation of zenen v'zelo chaser. Again, why is it zenen v'zelo chaser? Because the Baal Aliyah gets free rent in this house. But on the other hand, the Baal HaBayis loses nothing because there was no bayis there. And he himself, the Baal HaBayis, is not interested in, for whatever reason, in rebuilding the house. Maybe he can't finance it. So Gemara says, no, there's no proof from that Mishnah. Shani Hasam Debesa La'aliyah Mishtabed. The bias is Mishubad for the Aliyah. In other words, the Baal Aliyah has concrete monetary rights in the Aliyah, that on top of this house, the there should be an aliyah, there should be this this rooftop. But since the Baal Aliyah has chusim in this bayis vis-a-vis the aliyah, to see to it that the Baal bayis will tolerate his aliyah, that chus gives, in addition to the right to build on the roof, gives him rights in the bayis itself to live there, up until the point in which the Baal Bais will chip in for the yitzios of reconstructing the house, for these expenditures. That's not called nena mimomon chavero, like the classical case we're dealing with where somebody squats and somebody's land doesn't have to pay rental fees. Here it's not that the Baal Aliyah is just squatting in the bias that he's built and he you know, he's nene and he doesn't have to pay. No, this is not what you call nene in the classical sense. This is a case of schusim. The Baal Aliyah actually has schusim in the bayis, and he has the right to say to the Baal Bais, look, you're not building me a house, then I now take over those rights up until the point at which you chip in for my expenses. Oh. Now, let's take a look at the other part of this Mishnah in Bava Metzia. Toshma, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda has a comment to make. Af zeh hador b'chatzer chavero shalom idato tzorch lahalos lo schar. Af zeh, what's the af zeh? He disagrees with the Tanakhama, and Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that Baal Aliyah, who's living in the house of the Baal Abayis without any sort of contract, no das machne of any sort, he's going to have to pay for living in the house. Yishma mino, let's derive from the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda the opposite conclusion, namely that zeh nedev zeh lo chaser chayav. As we wanted originally be medayik from this Mishnah, that zeh nedev zeh lo chaser is patur, and the answer is this is not called nene because the bias is meshuvah to the Baal Aliyah. But now we turn to Rabbi Yehuda and we want to come to the exact opposite conclusion based on Rabbi Yehuda. Zenene v'zelo chaser is chayav. And why is that so? Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Baal Aliyah has to pay schar dira, and that's going to be subtracted from the amount of money of hotzos which the Baal HaBayis has to pay. And that's called a dar b'chatzav shelo midaito.
So we're talking about Zenenev, Zelo Choser again. The Baal HaBayis doesn't lose anything here. Adarav, his house is being reconstructed. The Baal HaAliyah is Nene because he's living in the house. He doesn't have to pay rental fees. And nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda says, Chayav. So you see that Zenenev, Zelo Choser, Chayav. The Gemara rejects this and says, Shani Hasa, Mishum, Shachru Risa, the Ashiyasa. And Shachrisa means the blackening of Ashiyasas, the walls from the smoke that is made by living in the house. Meaning, when you live in the house, you have a fireplace and you have cooking and there's fire going on in the house and heating. It goes, the Ashan goes up. And what happens is it blackens the wall. So as a result of the fact that the Baal HaAliyah A, built the house, but more importantly, B, lived in the house. You know, we're not talking about an old house where you add a little bit more of this, you know, smoke in the darkness. No, we're talking about a brand new house. And as a result of the fact that the Baal HaAliyah is living in this house, the Baal HaBayis is the Baal, the one who built, who owns the house, who built out the one who owns the house, he's losing out by the fact that the Baal HaAliyah is living in the house. Why? Because the Baal HaAliyah living in the house and keeping up the heating and so forth, that causes the darkening of the kosel, of the various walls of the house. So that's called Zen Nene Vizeh Choser. And that's why you're chayav. Now what's tricky about this sugya is that if you want to compare Schar Dira as a sum of what you'd pay for rental, let's call it 100, compare that to the Shtaya, let's say that's only worth 50. So the Hanoi is so much greater than the Chisora. And it's odd that the Nene should pay such an exorbitant amount, in this case rental fees in an expensive real estate area, just because of a small chisaron of shachrusa the ashaisa. Probably if you just paint it a little bit or wash it, clearly you can restore the house to its original state. So that's going to be a big issue here in the Rishonim. There are those Rishonim who say that the Nene here doesn't have to pay more than the amount of loss that was caused by Shacharisu Debeisa. And there's something very attractive about that position. Shalchu Bei Rabbi Ami. They sent this suffix of Zenen of Zelo Choser to Rabbi Ami. Omar, and his response was, V'chima Osalo Uma Chisro Uma Hiziko. So Rav Ami responds the following. The one who's living in the house is not causing any chisaron to the owner of the house because it's not omed l'haskir and there's no hezek and therefore he's part of Mishalim. So Rav Ami takes a position here on Zeh Nenev Zeh Lochos that you're part of. Rabbi Chiyo Bar Abba, on the other hand, Omar, Nisyashev Badovar. I think we better investigate this question and not just give a quick answer. Hodar Shalchua Kameh Rabbi Chiyo Bar Abba. Later on, they asked for an Eitzah. They sent this issue to Rabbi Chiyo Bar Abba. Omar, Kulei Hai Shalchuli V'Ozli. What does that mean? Kol kach harbe pa'amim sholchim li v'holchim kama pi'amim. Meaning that you've posed this question to me time and time again, and I never gave you an answer. Ilu ashkeche, had I known an answer to your question, ilu ashkeche ba'taima, if I would have found some sort of logical reason why he should even be potter chayv, lo shlachna lahu? Question mark. He asks a rhetorical question. Wouldn't I have sent you the answer to your question? So what we do have at this point is Rabbi Ami, who holds that Nenev Zelo Choser is potter. What we don't have is a final conclusion of Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba. So So Gemara says, Itmar, let's try to figure out what Rabbi Yochanan holds about this case of Dar b'chavero b'chotz chaver shlomi daito. Rav Kahana Omar Rav Yochanan. Rav Kahana has a tradition of Rav Yochanan. We'll soon see a different tradition. She'eino tzorch la'alos lo schar, that Zen Erev Ezel Uchosu is not obligated to pay. Rav Yavo Omar Rav Yochanan. Rav Yavo quotes Rav Yochanan saying tzorch la'alos lo schar. According to his tradition, Rav Yochanan took the position that Zen Erev Ezel Uchosu is chayav. Omar Rav Papa. Now, as you're quoting Rabbi Avo, as if Rabbi Avo said that Tzorech Laalos Lo Schar, that Zen Enev Zel Luchos is Chayev, and the truth, and he's saying it in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. The truth is, we never heard it from Rabbi Yochanan in that way, and even Rabbi Avo never heard it explicitly from Rabbi Yochanan, but rather he heard something X, we'll call it, and he derived his conclusion, we'll call it Y. So it's all based on a diuk in trying to understand what Rabbi Yochanan would say about this case, and therefore says Rabbi Papa, you know what, this statement of Rabbi Avo is not reliable. Let's not rely on it. Okay, so let's see how Rabbi Avo was medayik and came to the conclusion that Zenene Vizelo Chosar in Rabbi Yochanan's frame of reference is Chayav. And for this we have to learn a Mishnah Me'ila. The Mishnah is on Daf Yud Testament Beis Disnan Notal. We're talking here about the Gizbar of Hegdesh, who's in charge of all the contributions that come in for the building of the for the Migdash. And Natal Evan al Korish al Hegdesh Hare Zelomal. So we're talking about the Isur Me'ila, if someone is Nenem in a Hegdesh, and we're talking specifically about the case of Evan Okora Shal Hegdesh. So there was an Evan Okora that was dedicated to the Mizbeach, the Beis HaMikdash, and the Gizbar himself took these precious and important building tools and he used it for his own purposes. Is the Mishnah says in Masechet Me'ila, Hare Ze Mal, that in fact this is Me'ila. And the reason for that is what we call Loshina Es Reshuso Shel Hamama. In other words, if the Gizbar takes it, he doesn't take it out of one Reshus and bring it to the other Reshus, which would be classical Me'ila Gzela, but rather it was always in the Reshus of the Gizbar, this Evan and this Korah, and Nasna L'Chavero Huma. I understand very well that if the Gizbar would give as a gift to his friend or to sell it to his friend, and we're talking about this Korah Shel Hegdesh, is Hu Mal, the Gizbar's Chayav Midin Me'ila, the Chaver Lomal, but the recipient is not considered a Moel. Let's try to figure out the difference here. In scenario number one, the Gizbar himself uses the Evan of the Korah for his purposes, but the Evan of the Korah never left the Reshus of the Gizbar. They're always there, they always remained there. However, in the second case, the Gizbar gave over the Evan of Korah Shel Hegdesh L'Chavero, to his friend. His friend made a kinyan on it, and the Gizbar has that license to give it over. Is Humal, in this case, as opposed to the first case, the Gizbar is a Moel, because he took this Korah and he handed over to Ploni Almoni, L'Chavero, he took it out of the Rishus of Hegdesh. It's no longer Kodesh, by the way, once it's Me'il, it's Yotze L'Chulin, and we've discussed this in Masechta Kedushin. For Chavero Lomal,
But once the Gizbar took the Korah and he gave it over to Ploni Almoni, it already was Yotzi Lechulin. The Ploni Almoni never was in violation of Me'ilah. But again, if the Gizbar did not transfer ownership over this Evan or Korah to someone else, Binah B'toch Beso, and he used the Evan or the Korah as one of the building blocks to construct his house, Hareza Lomal Achi Yodur Tachteha Shavu Pruta. At what point does the Isur Me'ilah come to the fore, even in the case of the Gizbar? That's if the Gizbar enjoys the benefit of this Korah to the value of a Shavu Pruta. And that takes place the minute that he, the Gizbar, moves into this house that was built with a Korah Shel Hegdesh in it. So he's being Nene, a Shava Pruta's worth. Because again, Me'ilah requires Hotzah Mershus Hegdesh. That's like the case where the Gizbar gave it over to, transferred ownership over this Korah to the Chaver. That's number one, Otzah Mershus Hegdesh. And number two, using the Heftzah Shel Hegdesh, benefiting directly from the Heftzah Shel Hegdesh to the tune of a Shava Pruta. If, in case number one, the Gizbar transferred ownership over this Korah to the Chaver, and the Chaver made a kinyan on it, then the Gizbar is considered a Moel because of Hotzah Mershus Hegdesh, because it's Yotzi L'chulin through this act of Me'ilah. If, on the other hand, we have a case of Bino L'toch Beso, which means that the Gizbar did not transfer ownership to some chaver, to a third party, but rather he built it into his own house. L'chor, there is no longer a me'ila under the category of hotzav mishus l'shus. Nevertheless, yadur achi yadur tachtea shave pruta, once he enjoys the benefit of hegdesh, and you can evaluate that hanah as a shave pruta, that itself is Me'ilah. And if I would ask you the quick quiz question, when do you find the case of Me'ilah where the object did not leave its Rishus? The answer that you want to give me is Hishtabshus. Whenever there was Shimush B'Chefetz, and even though you didn't take the Chefetz from one Rishus to another Rishus, as long as that Hanah could be evaluated as a Shavu Pruta, that's called Me'ilah. The Omar Shmuel makes a comment on that point in the Mishnah that we saw at the end, that the Gizbar will be chayav for Me'ilah when he has a hanah of Shavu Pruta by using the Hegdesh. For who? Sheiniach al pi aruba. We're talking about a case where he didn't take the Korah and build it into the very structure of the house, but rather he had an aruba and he placed the Korah on the peh of the aruba, not as part of the structure itself, just literally laying it on top of the aruba, the skylight. And since it's not part of the structure, then there's no change in the object. So when does Me'ilah apply, says Shmuel? In a case of Bono B'toch Beso, that's when it is B'toch Beso Mamish. He was koved as part of the binyan. Then he's mal, then he's chayav for Me'ilah. Immediately. Why? Because that's called shinui. And if it's a shinui, that itself, says Shmuel, comes under the first category of Me'ilah, namely Hotzah Mirshus Hegdesh. Again, even though it's the Gizbar the whole time. But nevertheless, it was built into the structure of the binyan. It now takes on a whole new identity that itself constitutes a hotzah mershus l'shus. The Yosef Rabbi Avo kamei de Rabbi Yochanan, the Ka'omar Mishmei de Shmuel. On one occasion, Rabbi Avo was sitting in front of his Rebbe Rabbi Yochanan, and he was telling over the sugya Mishmei, v'ka'omar Mishmei. And what does Mishmei mean? In the name of. So Rabbi Avo is sitting in front of Rabbi Yochanan, he's saying over a sugya in the name of Dishmuel. And then Zoso Meres, Hadar b'chatzah chavero shalomi daito, tsarech lahalos loschar. It means zenene v'zelo chaser is chayev. Why? Because again, in the case where the gizbar is living and benefiting from the korah, then in that scenario, in that circumstance, the gizbar is chayev mishum me'ila, and this apparently, and if I understand correctly, Shmuel made a point, this is similar to the case of Dar B'chatzer Shlomi Daito, because in the case of somebody living in, squatting in someone's field, he doesn't have the das, he doesn't have the express will and agreement of the Balachotzer. And here too, in the case of Hegdesh, Hegdesh never gave the okay to take the Korah that they own, that's Rishus Hegdesh, and build it into the bias. And in this case, it would seem to be a case in which you're chayav schar, because you never got, you know, you want to abscond and sort of take, embellish for yourself the rights to enjoy something that belongs to someone else without his agreement, then you have to pay for that. Now, what was Rabbi Yochanan's response? V'shasak le. Rabbi Yochanan was silent when he heard this tradition of Rabbi Avo in the name of Shmuel. And now Rav Pop explains that, you know what, even though Rabbi Yochanan was quiet, you cannot derive from that silence a definite conclusion that Rabbi Yochanan maintains that Zeneh Vezelo Chaser is Chayev. Iu Sava, Rabbi Avo thought midishasik modele, that the shtika of Rabbi Yochanan itself is a tacit approval to this conclusion. Veloi, but that's not so. Ashkechuchi lo ashkechbe. Could be that the reason why Rabbi Yochanan was silent is because he didn't pay attention to the whole thing. He thought that the analogy is not accurate. You can't talk about shalomi das in the case of Hegdesh. You know, what do you mean shalomi das? Hegdesh really represents the Shechina itself, or herself. And in that sense, it's always going to be midas Shechina, with the awareness of the Shechina. And to the same extent where, if I squat in your land and I notify you, so you're on board here, you know, I'm not fooling you, you know about it. Here too, in the case of Hegdesh, the Hegdesh knows that the Gizbar is enjoying this benefit from the Korah. Kiddur Rabbah. And this analysis would be embodied in the statement of Rabbah, the Omer Rabbah, and now we're going to turn to Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. Hegdesh Shelo Midas Kehejo Midas Don. Meaning that in Hejot you can talk about Midas or Shalom Midas. In Hegdesh it's always Midas. And therefore, even if it's Shalom Midas, it's considered Midas. That's because Shechina always has what we call Das, Das Shechina. So if a person uses for his own purposes the Nechasim of Hegdesh, the Shechina is aware that he's doing so. So Rashi learns Kehejo Midas Tami, as we said before, that there's no such thing as Shalom Midas. The Shechina is aware of everything. Tosus is Dibra Maschil Kehejot, which is the top Tosus on Daf Chaf Aleph. He's not so thrilled with this Rashi. He's of the opinion that in the case of a Hejot, if the Hejot doesn't make any Mecha against the squatter who's living in his land, then there's no nafkamina whether the squatter came in midas bailim or shalom midas bailim. And if it's a case of Nichnas Midas, and the verdict, the ruling is that he's Chayev, then the same thing should apply even in Nichnas Shalomidas. So this whole distinction here about Midas and Shalomidas comes under Tosus's scrutiny. And Tosus writes, El Nireh, he wants to reinterpret what it means, Hegdesh Shalomidas is Kehejot Midas Tomi Klomar, Didas Shechina Ika Shaloyehena Adam Below Me'ila. That's the punchline. In other words, somebody uses Hegdesh Shalomidas. What we're talking about is someone who lives, who enjoys Hegdesh, and the Shechina is not gonna look the other way. You know, that's gonna be considered as Me'ila, and the status of somebody who's mold the Hegdish is that of a Mishtamish Bechotze Chavero Midas Bailam Umicha Boa Bailam. There's always an assumption that that Hegdish is going to protest, and the same assumption should apply in the case of the squatter. And therefore, he definitely has to pay Schar. And this is based on a sugya that we haven't learned yet, that the whole issue of Zen and of Zol Chaser possibly being potter only applies if there was no mecha mitzad ha-bailim. If the bailim made a protest, they made a, you know, they expressed their indignity and the fact that they're not happy with this situation, that itself removes the whole p'tur of zen enev zelo chaser. In Hegdish, since there's das shechina, which engenders an iser of me'ila, don't get any hanoah from Hegdish, that itself is an automatic mecha. That's the way Tosfos interprets this sugya. Sholach le Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda Limore Barmar. Fine, there's a whole tradition here regarding this suffek of Dar Bechatz Chavir Shlomidaito Boy Mine Mirav Huna. And he asks Rav Huna the following question. In other words, this question was supposed to be presented to Rav Huna, and Mori Bar Mar, who got the message from Rabbi Abba to present this question, Rav Huna did not get a chance to do so. And Rav Huna passed away. So the question was never actually presented to Rav Huna in his lifetime. But Rabba, the son of Rav Huna, he himself knew the opinion of his father on this issue, and offered the answer in place of his father. So like subbing in for his late father. Amalei Rabba Bar Rav Huna, Hachi Amar Abba Mori, this is what I heard from my father. Mishmei the Rav, and it goes back to Rav. Eino tzorach lahalos lo schar. That he's potter. And this, if you recall, was not necessarily the opinion of Shmuel. Shmuel had derived from the Mishnah in Me'ila of Bino betoch beis hareza lomal ad shiyodu tachter, that if he lives and enjoys the benefit of this building that has the Korah Shel Hegdish and Ashava Prutus Dekahanoah, then he pays. And therefore Shmuel derived the conclusion that Dar B'chatz Chavei Shlomidaito Tzarech La'alos Lo Schar. Here we have a tradition that is attributed to Rav that Eino Tzarech La'alos Lo Schar. So we see that this issue continues to be a bone of contention through the generations. And Rabba now adds something in the name of his father, an additional horah. Vasocher bayis miruvein malaskar l'shimon. Now, this is a very strange statement. Ruvain is the renter, and somebody, we'll call him Levi, rents the house of Ruvain. He pays rental fees to Shimon. So Gemara immediately asks Shimon, my avidite. You know, where did Shimon come into this picture? Why should Shimon collect rental fees from the house of Reuven? It belongs to Reuven. Hachikomer. This is what Rav Huna had said. The case is where Levi rents a house from Reuven, And he was under the misimpression, Levi, that the house was owned by Reuven. Nimtza bayis shel Shimon. Lo and behold, the owner of the house is not Reuven, but Shimon. Is Milo schar. You have to pay schar to Shimon. So Gemara doesn't understand. Tarti. There are two different oros that Rabbah, the son of Rav Huna, quoted the name of his father, and they seem, at the face of it, to contradict each other. Because on the one hand, if a person rents a house from Reuven and he lives there, Shalom Midas Shimon, he's got to pay Shimon. And yet, on the other hand, Rabbah quoted his father Rav Huna just a minute ago as saying the name of Rav that ain't Tzarech La'alos Lo Schar. Meaning, in this case where Shimon is unaware of the fact, he's the real buyer, unaware of the fact that Reuven sold his, you know, sold rental rights and rented out his house to Levi. Why does Levi have to pay rental to Shimon? It's really a case of Dar B'chas Shechaveh Shalom Midaito. He should be part of according. So there's a contradiction here. And the Gemara answers, there's no contradiction. Why? Ha de Kaimol Yagra, ha de Lo Kaimol Yagra. In the last case, where Reuven rented out Shimon's field to Levi without telling Shimon about it, that field or that bias was Omedes Laskara. It's not a case of Zenene Vizel Lo Chaser, but rather Zenene Vizel Chaser. And the reason for that is because this house is rentable. You know, that's what it's used for. It's always on the market for rental. But in the case of the original Horah in the name of Rav, there it's a chatzah to lo kaimel agra, and that becomes zenen of ezelo chaser, and therefore your pot. The Gemara now brings another statement that seems to get involved in different chilukim, different dinim in this regard. Itmar nami omar abchia bar avin omar rav yamrle omar abchia bar avin omar rav huna hadar b'chatz chavel shalomi daito eino tzarech lahalos lo schar. And that would support what we said in the name of Rav in the original discussion about Rav Huna and Rav's son. V'asocher bayis mibnei ha'ir Male schar lebailim. Now, what's going on in this last case? Somebody rents a house from the members of the community, and he has to pay schar to the bailim. Bailim mayavidite, the Gemara asks. In other words, if the bnei ha'ir own this house, that's the premise of the Gemara's kasha, then let him pay rental to the Bnei Ha'ir. Why is he paying rental to the Bailim? What does that mean? Hachi Kamar. And again, it's going to be a case of a mistaken rental agreement where the renter thought that the Bnei Ha'ir was the Bailim. But Achakach later, Nimtza Ulo Bailim, they find that so-and-so is the real owner of the house. It's not the Bnei Ha'ir. It's Ma'ilem Schar. You have to pay Schar to the Bailim, to the true Bailim. So the Gemara says, Tarti, once again, there seems to be a contradiction, because if you're paskening Rav that Hador B'chatz Chashay Shalom Yidait is Potur, why does the quote-unquote squatter, in this case the person who rented the house, have to pay the Bailim when he finds out who the true Bailim is? So the Gemara answers, ha de kaimi biagra, ha de lo kaimi biagra. Again, we're going to have to make that distinction as we discussed earlier. Now the Gemara wants to offer a different kind of logical approach to justify Rav's opinion that Adar al-Bachat Shkavir Shalmi Daito is Patur. Amar Rav. Amar Rav Schor, Amar Rav Hun, Amar Rav Hador B'chatz Chaver Shalom Yidaiti Nitzorch Al Schor Mishum Shenemar Ushe'iyah Yukas Sha'ar. is a pasuk in the 24th parak of Yeshaya. And the interpretation is that there's a shade. Again, we're not Bekim and Shadim, but it has the name She'iyah. And there's a Sharabayas. A Sharabayas means the no people lingering around. It's like a haunted house, we would call it the entranceway into the house. And now the person who squats in this house is really in effect giving benefit to the owner of the house, because as a result of his living in the house, it's not considered a churva, it's not considered a lo nechrav besom. In other words, the bias is still functional, so maybe the shadim will run away, and in that sense it makes it's logical to explain why the dar, the person who squats in this house, this haunted house, this empty house, is potter from paying schar dira. Omar mar barav ashi lididi chazili. I actually came face to face with this she'iyah guy, this shade, umenageach ki Torah, and it has the power of a shor, of a strong ox, to gore and to destroy. Rav Yosef Amar, Rav Yosef says, Besa miyasva. In other words, if there are people living in the house, Yosef, and Rav Yosef seems to be arguing that if you want to potter up the squatter, don't introduce Shadim, the fact that he lives there and chases away the Shadim. Just the very fact that he's living there will certainly lead to improving the house. You know, they'll look around, they see what needs fixing, etc., etc. My Benai, what's the difference here between the explanation of Rav and the explanation of Rav Yosef? Iko Benayu, the Nafkamina is going to be the Komish Tamesh Bei Bitsive Visivna. The Balabayas used to use this building, this structure, as what we call an otsar. Otsar means a storage house. Since he would put his cut down logs there, he would put any sort of bricks that he needed. It became like a shed. And now, as a result of the fact that someone squats in this building, well, should we really potter him up? If he's, the way Rav says, getting rid of the sha'ayah, this shade, well, since the Baal Bayis uses this house not for living purposes, but as a shed for his logs, then the shadim would have to disappear. And therefore, the squatter didn't give any benefits here to the owner of the house. But if we take Rav Yosef's approach, that by living in the house, they do also to tikkunim, they fix up the house, then the person who's living there is actually being mahana, he's giving benefits to the owner of the house. Now we're going to discuss Rav Nachman. What's Rav Nachman's opinion with regard to Dor b'chatzer shel chaver shelo midaita? Till now we've been discussing Rav and Shmuel. So we're going to derive Rav Nachman's view on this issue from a story. Ahu Gavra, there was a case of a man, Debona Afanda. Afanda is an armon in Hebrew, meaning a beautiful castle. Akilkalta diyasme, on the rubbish of the Yisomen, of these Yasme. Agbe Rav Nachman le'afande mine. Rav Nachman wanted to confiscate this beautiful structure, this armon, the afande, from the individual who built that armon on top of the ashpa, and he would force him to pay the yisomim rental fees if he used and lived in the house. Lema katsav Rav Nachman, we see from this verdict of Rav Nachman, Hador bechatzer chaver shlo midai to tzorch la'al slo schar. He wanted to charge rental fees to the squatter, and that would seem to indicate that if a person packs into someone's chutz and he squats and he lives there, he has to pay schar. And that's where the Gemara rejects this proof. Hahu, in that particular story, meikara karminoi havidaribe, originally, who would live in this ashpa of these somim? They were members of a tribe of a nation called Karminoi. The yoyve le lehu liasme davarmut. They paid a minimum sum of money to the somim for living in that garbage dump, so to speak. The fact that they paid even a davar muat, that sets up a definition of this chatzer as omedes lahaskir. And therefore, everybody would agree in this case, it becomes zenenev zechoser, because this person came along, this squatter, he got rid of all those that were living there earlier, built himself a castle there, is Omar Le. So Rav Nachman says, zil paisinu liyasme. In other words, give them the somim dmei schirus, the rental fees, and they'll be happy. Vlo ashkach. And this individual did not pay any attention. He didn't heed the words of Rav Nachman. Is agbe Rav Nachman lafandemine. That's why Rav Nachman confiscated this armon from them, because they were unwilling to pay any sort of schar. So basically, the Gemara rejects its original position. Rav Nachman holds that hador bechatz chaver shlo midai to tzarech la'al so schar. This is the case really of omedes l'schirus l'askara, and therefore, if only the squatter, we'll call him, would have agreed to pay the schirus, because this case is an enevzeh chaser, Rav Nachman wouldn't have chepped with him. Why did Rav Nachman give him that harsh penalty and confiscate the beautiful structure that he built? This because he was unwilling to subjugate himself to the ruling of Rav Nachman and pay the yisomim. I wanted to comment here before we end the sugya that the Yad Ramah here in the sugya says that you see something very interesting from this last story of the Akil Kalta the Yasmi. Yisomim are usually assumed to be Ktanim, and Ktanim lav b'nei mechila ninhu. If we're assuming that the halacha of Dar b'chatz chaver patur is built on, predicated on mechila, it should not be operative in the case of Ktanim. And yet, the Gemara seems to apply this in Rav Nachman's context, even to the case of the Soman. And therefore, what we could see is that you don't need mechila in order to set up this patur, but rather this patur is a separate, independent patur based on the fact of lo chaser. Now, getting back to our Mishnah for a moment, in our Mishnah we see that Hana is a mechayev, and the Mishnah says that even where, let's say, Ochla Mitoch HaRachava, which is Shein B'Shesarab, and the owner of the animal, the Mazik, does not pay damages, unless it was Tzidei Rachava, but in the Rachava itself, they'll pay damages, but nevertheless, the Mishnah insists that Hanoa is a Mechayev, and Ketzah Mishalem is Masha Nenes. So that we have to, perhaps, develop a distinction between, on the one hand, Hana in the case of Zenene, and Hana in the case of a Mazik. And it would seem to me that the direction to go here is that Hana in the case of a Mazik is really a Chiv Nezikin. It's not a Chiv of general Dini Mominus, and Hana is a Mechayv. Could be that we Paskin, that seems to be clearly indicated by Rav, and even Lamaskana by Rav Nachman, that Hador B'chot Shechavero Eino Tzorch La'alos L'schar, that Hano itself per se is not a Mechayev of Didi Momentus. Again, that has to be checked out thoroughly. But in our Mishnah, we're talking about a different kind of a Mechayev, and that's Nezikin. So the full-fledged Nezikin you don't pay, but you pay Nezikin for the Hanor, if you follow that subtle point. Interpreting the Mishnah, Rav says that when it says Ochla Mitzidei Harachava, when it's the Tzidei Harachava, that's already a Shinui, is then Mishalemes Mashi Zika. That's the case where the behema, the gufa behema, is in the rechava, umechazeres, and it puts its head from the rechava into the tzida shel rechava in order to eat the fruits that are situated there. So that the chiddush of the Mishnah, according to Rav's understanding of the Mishnah, is that even though the animal is located in the Rechava, which is Rishus HaRab Mamish, and it would not engender a Chiv Nezikin in the case of Shane, but nevertheless, Rav says the Chiddush of Mishnah is that since the eating, the actual Achila, when the head went into the Tzidei Rechava, was in a Rishus HaNizak, you pay damage. Shmuel Amar Afil Machazeres Nami Potter. Shmuel holds that since the Guf HaBehemo is in the Rechov and the Rishus HaRabim, therefore, even though the head of the animal is stretched out into Tzidei Rishus HaRabim, it's still considered a Hezik Rishus HaRabim, Shein Rishus HaRabim, therefore it's Potter. So the Gemara right away asks, Ule Shmuel Hechi Mishkachas Lei Demachayev. What would be the case, according to Shmuel, of Tzidei Rechov Mishalemes Mashi Ziko, where he pays damages? And the Gemara answers, Kigon Dishvakta Lirechova, that the animal completely evacuated the Rechova, the Uzla Vekoma, and it stood up, and it went for a little spatzir into the Tzidei Rechov, and that's where the animal is situated, and that's not the normal place where you find animals walking, and it's no longer considered Rishus HaRabim, and that's why the animal has to pay damages. So the entire process which led up to the Achila took place in the Tzidei Rechava, and that's the Shinui that we're talking about. Ika demasni le lohosh maito biapi nafshe. There was another version which presented the debate between Rav and Shmuel as an independent machlokas, not in terms of how to understand that Mishnah. And the question that was raised in front of Rav and Shmuel is mechazeres, if the animal stands in the rechava and the Rishus HaRabim but stretches its head out to eat in Tzidei Rechava, what's the din? Rav Amar Chayeves, Rav says that it has to, he, the owner of the animal, pays for damages because the head of the animal was stretched into the Rishus HaNizak, we'll call it, the Tzidei Rishus HaRabim. Shmuel Amar Ptura, Shmuel says there's no chiyuv. And the Gemara is going to ask, Shmuel Mishalemes Mashi Zika Hechi Mishkachas Lei Demachayve. So when is the case where you're chayev to pay for Tzidei, or shall we say, for what's the exact language here? Yeah, Tzidei Rechava. I think Tzidei Rechava is fine. And the Gemara answers could go into Shavkal Rechava when the animal moved completely into the Tzidei Rechava and completely evacuated, leaving no trace of its body in the Rechav itself. He has the Kama, but see the Rechav. Masiv Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Rav Nachman wants to raise an objection to Rav, because Rav says, Chayeves, even though the animal is still in the Rechav. Mipesach hachanus mishalemes ma'ashenenes. The Mishnah says that in the entryway to the chanus, that's considered outside of the Rishus HaRab. Hechi mishkachas lo, l'chora, what's the case? Pshita b'machazeres. Right, the opening of the chanus is not in the Rechava, it must be in Tzidei Rechava, because the chanuyos was set a little bit inwardly, not on the Rechav itself. Uka Amar, nevertheless, the Mishnah insists that you pay Masha Nenes. meaning Mashaneni's in Mashi Zikal Lo. I mean, this would really support Shmuel that there's no Chiv Nezikin in the case of Mechazeres, where the animal's body is located in the Rechov itself. And Shein Bish Sarab is Potami Nezikin Chayav Be Hano Lo. So the Gemara says, who Mosiv Lavu Mefarik? Rav Nachman raised this question, this objection against Rab, but he also resolved this problem. The Kaima Bekeren Zovis. This Chanus is located in a Keren Zovis. What is a Keren Zovis, and why should the din change in this case of Keren Zovis? To explain this answer of Keren Zovis and why the Mishnah says Yechayev here, let's go back to Rav. What was the logic of Rav, who said that B'mechazeres Yechayev? And the answer is because Mechazeres has an element of Shelo Kedarka. Imagine, the animal is in one place and it's lunging its head, stretching out its head to another place. That's, from one reshus to the other, that's a little bit unusual. And since it's unusual, the halach of reshus harabim doesn't kick in. We view the achila from the tzidei rechav, when the animal stretches its head out, as something other than kedarka. Now we're ready for Keren Zovis, which is a small alleyway that leads into the Rechava, to the wider area, the Shuk, or the place where people walk, and so forth and so on. And this Chanus is located at the very tippy end of the small Mavui. The animal comes from the bigger, larger Mavui into the alleyway. So it goes out of the Rechava, the wide area, into this very narrow area called the Mavui Katan. And that's where the animal saw fruits that were situated in the Mavui Katan at the entranceway to this store. In such a case, the animal didn't have to do something unusual, to lunge, to stretch out its head. It eats it in the most normal pattern. And that, according to Rav, is called Shein Birshus Harabim. And if you only pay Mashenenes. So that which we saw in the Mishnah, in the case of Pesach HaChanus Mishalemes Mashenenes, that's a case where the Achil is Kedarka, and even Rav agrees that we classify it as Rishus HaRabim, and therefore you're Potur Minazik, and you only Chayev Hano. Mashenken, where did Rav say that in the case of Mechazeres, you're chayev, meaning it's no longer Rishus HaRabim, but rather it's viewed as Sidei Rishus HaRabim, which is like Chatzah and Nizak. That's when it's an unusual kind of situation where the animal stretched its head out to eat peros in a different Rishus. Now, Ika Diyamri, we have a different version of the Machlokas that we've been discussing now between Rav and Shmuel about the case of Mechazeres. And according to the Lishna Basra, Mechazeres kuliyamalo pligi dechayeves, which means that even Shmuel would agree that you pay for nezikin in mechazeres because the animal ate the pears out of tzidei harachava. Keep pligi, but what's the subject of machlokshin Rav and Shmuel? Be makte makom mirshuso lirshus Rav. There's a Rishus HaRabim, and contiguous to the Rishus HaRabim is a piece of real estate which is owned by so-and-so. And when so-and-so owns this piece of property near the Rishus HaRabim, he builds his house at a certain distance from the Rishus HaRabim. He leaves part of his land, which he technically owns, for the B'nai Rishus HaRabim. He doesn't need it. It's an extension of the Rishus HaRabim, and he says, you know what, anyone can use it. Then he pours his peros, he stretches out his peros on that karka, which he left for the Rishus HaRabim. An animal coming from the Rishus HaRabim on its way goes into this area, which again is technically privately owned. V'hochi Itmar, and here's where we have Machlokes, Rav, and Shmuel. Amar Rav, lo shanu ela mechazeres aval makta mokom v'shusa l'shusa rabim p'tura. So let's compare the two cases. In case number one, which is our Mishnah, that's called Mechazeres, where she stretches her head out into the Tzidir Rechava, that's considered, rather than Shein versus a Rabin, that's considered Hezek versus a Nizak, and therefore you have to pay for the Zikin. But in this particular set scenario of what we called Pesach HaChanus, where what we're dealing with is a person designates a certain shetach, a certain area, from his own private rishus to be part of rishus harabim. If the animal goes in there and eats the fruits, that's already rishus harab mamish. And that's what Rav argues, that the owner of the animal doesn't have to pay any damages, because shem rishus harabim is potter min hazikin. Ushmuel Amar Afilu b'maktzem makom rishus l'shus harabim chayeves. Even in this case where the owner of the chanus, like the or the bias, whatever it was that he built on that karka, left a strip of karka designated for the rishus harabim, and therefore you might think, as Rav actually thought, that it becomes like a rishus harabim, and when the animal goes in there to eat, its shem rishus harabim is p'tura. Shmuel says chayeves, no. That area, although it's now singularly designated as part for the Rabbim, nevertheless, it's still privately owned, and it doesn't have the chal shem of Rishus HaRabim. It's ubir b'steyacher, and shem is chayeves. What is the root of this machlokes between Rav and Shmuel about Pesach Achanus? Lema. Now the Gemara wants to take us in a totally different direction. We have Machlokas Tanoim later on Daf Mem Tes Amid Beis about the nature of the definition of Chiyuv Mazik of Bar, specifically in the case of a person who digs a bar in his backyard and then he's mafkir the whole Rishus around the bar, and he allows the Rabbim to go all the way up to the point of the bar, to Sfasa bar. He's not makpid at all on this bar. And the Mishnah records Machlok Shim Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. According to Rabbi Akiva, that is a chiyuv of bar. If anyone falls in there, he's going to have to pay damages. Rabbi Shmuel says no, he's potter. And why does Rabbi Shmuel insist that he's potter? Because he owns that bar. Bar has to be owned by the Rabbim, not by an individual private entity. Now this is going to shed a light on our question of the animal eating peros that are left on a piece of privately owned property that was designated for the Rabbim. Rav di Omer Potu Kasover Bar Bishuso Chayev. This person who rolls out his fruits in the area that was designated for the Rabbim, those fruits become a bar, meaning that if an animal would slip and fall, he'd be chai for the nezikin. So this person who owns karka that's continuous to Rishus HaRabim did something in Eyu Bey that's a stira. On the one hand, he said, I'm designating this particular area for the Rishus HaRabim. On the other hand, he puts his peros there, which is like a bar. And as a result, therefore, the principle that applies, which is a Gemara later on in Daf Lamed, call him a kalkul Rishus HaRabim, sheiziku chayovim l'shalom. Anyone who does something in the public area which he shouldn't have been doing, if others get damages, realty has to pay for this. And not only that, call a machzik b'hem liatzmo zocha. Anyone can pick up this bar in quotation marks, meaning this object, even though it has value, but it's a mazik, he can pick it up and take it for himself. Now, the assumption is that these peros are hefker. Anyone could take them. Everyone could be zochetim. And therefore, if somebody's animal eats the peros, he doesn't have to pay. That's Rav Shita Shmuel, the Omer Chayev Kasov, a bar b'shuso potter. Rav holds that a bar b'shuso is chayev, meaning once he is mafkir, the area around the bar, even though he retains ownership of the bar, that's still called bar. And Shmuel holds that, in this case again, where the balakarko is mafkir, that shetach, and designates it for bar b'shuso, so he still technically owns that area. And if he puts his peros down there, it's really in his own reshus, and that's why the behema has to pay him damages. It's not a case of shein versus a rabbin. It's not a derech ilucha who was walking in reshus rabbin, who was walking in private property. The Gemara doesn't like this. And here we turn to Daf Chaf Aleph Amid Beis Bi Alma. I will tell you that in a different case, bar b'shuso is potur. The Torah doesn't say that you're chayev for bar unless it's a bar b'shuso rabim v'shaini hocha. This case is difficult. Is different. Why? When he designates a certain area for the b'shuso rabim, he puts his peros there. Then, according to Rav, your potter from the animal eats it. Why? The Omar, because the owner of the animal that ate these pears has a right to claim Lav Kol Kaminech de Mekarvis Lehu Leperosach. There's just a Rav. Because you have no rights to take these fruits and put them so close to just a Rav. Umechaivas Lehu Letoroi, and then say, well, any oxen that eat from these peros is going to pay for that. You have no right to do that. Ushmuel Omar, Shmuel says, Bi Alma Bar B'Shuso Chayav. Why? Because he was mafkirit. And therefore, it becomes ownerless. The case of Makatza Makom, and then he puts his peros there, is different. That's not a case of bar b'shuso, the bishleim of bar equal meim lav adaite el peros mi equal meim lav adaite hachazile. In the case of the chiyuv bar, who says you can't expect the shor to make this havchana to be clear and avoid the bar and watch himself from falling in. He has a right to be there, and if he falls in, that's your problem. You have to pay for damages because it's your bar. And once the Bailam according to Shmuel were mafki, the Rishus around the bar, then the Bala bar is chayev. But in the case of Peros that he put out, can you say Lavadaita? Can you say that the Shar should not pay attention that the Peros there? Hachazi, like, certainly the Shar saw the Peros. And he should have been careful. And if he slipped and fell on these peros, then the person who put them there is potter. Shmuel is saying it's one thing to say that a person who is mafkir, his rishus, his bar and his rishus is chayav, because how is the animal going to protect itself from falling into the bar? On the other hand, in the case where the animal ate peros from this so-called bar, you can't say, well, the animal couldn't protect itself, and therefore shift the responsibility onto the Baal Bar. That's not sensible. The animal saw the peros and ate the peros. Rav holds in general that Bar B'Shuso is potter, not like Shmuel. But in this case, there's a reason to say that he's chayev because of the halacha of Shein. In other words, the Baal Behema has a right to say that this is part of the Rishus HaRabim now, since you designated it as part of the Rishus HaRabim. You had no right to put your peros there if you designated it for Rishus HaRabim. And that's going to create a chiyuv, so to speak, over the shoulders or on the head of the Baal HaPeros. And that's why Rav says that the Bala Behema that ate these pears is Potur. Okay, Rabbosai, we'll stop here. We're almost at the Mishnah, but we still have a piece of Gemara and Chafal from the days before the Mishnah, so Bli Neder will cover that in the next Shiur.